When the train to Crystal City, FDR's secret prisoner exchange program and America's only family internment camp during World War II, was published last year, the reception was pretty unanimous. Jane Jarbo Russell had opened, as the Boston Globe put it, a quietly moving window into a forgotten part of American history. The book tells of the secret history of an American internment camp in Crystal City, Texas, a desolate and dusty town just 35 miles from the Mexican border. Train cars with shades pulled shut delivered over 6,000 civilians during World War II to the guards at Crystal City, men of German, Japanese, and Italian descent, and their families, many of whom were U.S. citizens, were ripped from their homes across the United States and Latin America and deposited at Crystal City without due process in the only family internment camp to house multiple nationalities. They were arrested, charged with no crime, and incarcerated simply because of their country or culture of origin. Again, the title of the book is The Train to Crystal City. Jan Jarbo Russell is a Nieman Fellow, a contributing editor for Texas Monthly, and has written for the San Antonio Express News, the New York Times, and Slate. We welcome Jan Jarbo Russell to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
How did you come to this story?
Well, I came to this story because many years ago, when I was at the University of Texas as a student, I had a professor whose family was in this camp in Crystal City, Texas. And, of course, as the years went by, I learned about the internment of 120,000 Japanese and Japanese Americans in the 10 war relocation camps, but I never heard anything in history books about this camp. And what was so unusual about this camp, as you said, Joe, is it was the only camp that had only families and families of multiple generations, multiple nationalities. There were Japanese and Japanese Americans in the camp, Germans and German Americans, and a few Italians and Italian Americans. And so it was odd. And I investigated it, I came to understand how really expansive Roosevelt's internment policies were. I never thought when I was researching my book that they would turn out to be as relevant as they are today, given the sort of anti-immigrant feelings that we're hearing in the presidential campaign and in the attacks on Muslim mosques. And in so many ways, the unease we have going on in our country today, it feels a little bit like January 1942 instead of January 2015.
Well, tell us a little bit about Crystal City, Texas. This is a town about 35 miles from the Mexican border.
Right.
Why was it chosen?
Because of its obscure location. This was a secret camp, and the purpose of it was to reunite enemy alien fathers. These were immigrant fathers, first generation, who were here in the United States legally, but they were on the FBI watch list for various reasons, and so all of them were arrested and without any charges. They had no idea why they were arrested, and they worse, and they were separated from their families. And so the government said, we've got a deal for you. We'll let you be reunited with your families in Crystal City, Texas, with a little caveat. If we need to send you back to Germany or Japan, we will. And over the course of the war, there were six prisoner exchanges that FDR had. And so we had German and German-American children being sent from Crystal City, Texas, back into Germany, and Japanese and Japanese-Americans. And so that was the real most difficult thing about the camp. And I interviewed about 60 of the child survivors of the camp, many of whom, as Americans, were traded into war and spent time in Germany and Japan until they could make their way back.
What would get you, the criteria was what to get you into the camp?
What would get you the criteria to be arrested as an enemy alien had nothing to do with what you did in your life. It was your occupation. If you had an occupation that the FBI thought might be dangerous to the war effort, such as being an engineer, or if you were a Buddhist priest, there were 250 Buddhist priests in the camp in Crystal City, and the Buddhist priests were arrested because they thought that they were leaders, that they could have public opinion and help other Japanese, you know, be loyal to Japan, and that was the reason for that. So you're arrested on the basis of your occupation, or you are arrested if neighbors gave information about you that that was anonymous information given, at which happened a lot during the war, where you would have the kind of thing we have now, watch for people and stuff like that. They had it in spades during World War II.
You have a map in the book of the camp. It's huge. It is a very large facility.
It's 290 acres. It's a barbed wire fence. There were six guard towers. So the families that were always under guard, the penalty for escape was death. And so, I mean, it was a serious, the Japanese called it a concentration camp. Roosevelt referred to it as a concentration camp. The Germans called it an internment camp. And that's what they still call it. But life was very hard. You had most of the people came from the East Coast. Most of the Germans came from the East Coast, and many people from the New York area. And then most of the Japanese came from the West Coast. And these were big city kids that were there. And the kids that always said, you know, their first sight of rattlesnakes or of scorpions, they were just terrified. There were jaguars that were, you know, this is very, very empty land there. And the lights of the camp could be seen from Mexico. But so it was a dreary place. On the other hand, it was humanely run by the people that worked there that were Americans. They had schools in the camp. And it may seem strange, but given the situation, some of the children that were in the camp who are now in their 80s and 90s remember the camp fondly because that was when they were with their parents. And when they were traded into war, their lives became a living hell because wherever they went in Germany and Japan, people said, well, why are you here? Are you a spy? Are you an American spy? So they were often pelted with rocks and they could really hardly wait to get back to the United States. And they were loyal Americans, these children. They have lived remarkable lives in the United States.
The camp operated for how long?
Well, you're not going to believe this. It opened in 1942, and it did not close until 1948. And the reason for that was that after the war, and after Roosevelt died, they didn't know what to do with the camp. And, I mean, what were they going to do with it? And they couldn't just open the doors. It's a little bit like why we can't close Guantanamo Bay. Once you've arrested these people, what do you do with them? So they tried to deport all of them, but some of them by that time knew that, of course, the war had been lost. And they fought to stay. So eventually Truman just opened the doors in 1948 and had the remaining people just go out with nothing and start their lives all over. All of the people that were in the camp when they were arrested lost everything. They lost their homes. They lost their livelihoods. Their children's education was interrupted. So when the war was over and they got back, these children had to start from absolute scratch.
You write in the afterword of the book of your experiences. This book, The Train to Crystal City, has just been published in paperback. When this was published a year ago in hardcover, you went out on tour and you would do book signings at bookstores. Mm-hmm. and had many, many meetings with people who had a relationship with the camp, were in the camp, which, as you note, was a little bit even of a different experience, especially considering you had spent so much time in the course of writing of the book, of talking to people who had experienced the camp.
Right. So wherever I go, I still see, I meet new people who had some relation to the camp, either that they were children in the camp or that their fathers worked in the camp as Border Patrol agents. And yet all of this was a secret for so long. And the reason it was that when they left camp, every person who left the camp signed a document saying that they would never speak about what happened in the Crystal City camp. And most of the people that I interviewed before the book was published and all of them after said that they had signed the oath that they wouldn't talk, and they knew the power that the government had, and so they just didn't talk. And now there's this whole thing going on among these kids and among the kids of people who worked in the camp to better understand what happened there. The children never understood why they were in the camp. They didn't know why their fathers had been arrested. And, you know, when they attempted to find out why their fathers were arrested, they were told by their mothers that they just didn't know. So in the course of doing the research, I was able to get many of their FBI files, their father's FBI files, and they could see that they weren't arrested for any acts of disloyalty to the United States. All of the fathers were legal immigrants here. They were not illegal immigrants, and they just happened to be immigrants at a time when our country was at war in the countries of their birth. So it was just bad timing.
Since the book has been released a year ago, as you said, this issue has become very much to the forefront of our cultural debate as well as the political debate. What kind of context do you believe this story gives us?
Well, I think we now find ourselves caught in history's same old dreary circle of fear of the enemy that is within our midst. You know, I see the emotions that are provoked by ISIS are reminiscent of some of the emotions that were provoked after the attack on Pearl Harbor. In California, in Japantown, in Los Angeles, and in San Francisco, and elsewhere, you know, there were sort of the Japanese people were threatened with their lives, and they had people on television, and the radio saying, you know, open seasons for Japs. So the kind of rhetoric that we're hearing now about, and the attacks on Muslim mosques, and the Trump's idea about closing the border to Muslims, it's reminiscent of what happened then. And so I think that there is a lesson to be learned from history, and that while we do have to secure our borders and we do have to protect our homeland, we also have to consider the civil rights of immigrants who are here already.
The name of the book is The Train to Crystal City, FDR's Secret Prisoner Exchange Program in America's Only Family Internment Camp During World War II. The book is published by Scribner. Jan Jarboe-Russell, I thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Train to Crystal City. It's published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.